This is Choni's Circle.
I'm Tamar Labicki.
I'm Rabbi Paula Rose.
And on Choni's Circle,
we are going to explore Jewish texts from the Torah through the Talmud and lots of traditional commentaries to grapple with climate change, to help us process our emotions about climate change and about this particular moment, and to help us try to make sense of the world that we find ourselves in. Today, we're going to be looking at a text from the Pesach Haggadah, from the Magid section where we're telling the story of the Exodus. And in particular, we're going to be looking at a comment of the Midrash on one of the verses. So the verse itself says, Vayered Mitzrayma, and he went down to Egypt. That is Jacob, the Jewish people. And then it says, Anus al pi hadibur, forced by the word, that is God's prophecy to Abraham, that Abraham's descendants would leave the land and go into exile. And then the verse says, Vayagor sham, and he resided there. And then the Midrash on that says, this teaches that Yaakov, our ancestor, didn't go down to settle in Egypt, but rather only to reside there. As it is stated, and this quotes back to Genesis, where this is actually happening when the Israelites are going down to Egypt, it says, and they said to Pharaoh, to reside in the land we have come, since there is not enough pasture for your servants' flocks, since the famine is heavy in the land of Canaan. And now please grant that your servants should dwell in the land of Goshen. That is part of Egypt. So one thing that I think is like really striking here is that the Midrash is right in the sense that Vayagor, this verb that's translated here as to reside, really does have this sense of temporariness to it. And so it's linguistically correct to pick up on that and tie it back to like, oh yes, like maybe this transition into Egypt was never meant to be a permanent move. It wasn't that the Israelites had decided to immigrate to Egypt and that was going to be their new home. It's clear that there's intended to be something temporary there. I find that kind of striking.
So what's this other verb, lehishtakea? Because I didn't really recognize that.
Yeah, okay, so that's a great question. So I don't, to be totally honest, I don't know that much about this verb in this form, but it's actually related to the root of lehashkia, to invest. Right? There's a different kind of permanence to it. And I think there's actually something, I mean, that's like a different rabbit hole. I don't know if we want to go down it or not, but I think there's actually something really striking of that the Israelites are like intending to participate in Egyptian life at some kind of surface level. It's temporary and it's not a full integration, which fits well with the story where like we are going to see that as a very temporary part of our story, as opposed to something that's fundamental about who we are. As opposed to being like deeply invested in Egyptian society or invested in themselves as part of Egyptian society, which feels like a different thing. And I think it's just like an interesting lens actually for how we think about immigrants and refugees and the stories of different individuals today. And like, when is a move intended to be temporary? And there is a plan, whether it comes to fruition or not, to go back or to go to some new place, right? That wherever you are right now is sort of a stop on the journey. Versus like, when is a move actually this investment in a new place and a new society and a new culture and an investment in yourself as becoming part of that place and culture and society?
Yeah. What are the conditions that would lead to different attitudes around that?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's also a question about what the story that we tell from the outset and the story that we tell retrospectively, right? So I think, I don't know what it was like for Jacob or his descendants when they first went down to Egypt and like what they were actually thinking and experiencing, what they actually thought about the temporary or not so temporary nature of that move. I think from our vantage point, and there are like lots of Midrashim that speak to this, it's really, really important for the Exodus story and for the story of the Jews really becoming a people. It's really important that, like, somehow we're actually separate from Egyptian society, right? So, like, we go down, it's clearly temporary, we're isolated, there are Midrashim about we don't change the way that we dress and we don't change our names, which is actually kind of striking given that it seems that Joseph does both of those things, right? The brothers don't recognize him, so he's clearly dressed like an Egyptian, and the Torah tells us very explicitly that he has an Egyptian name. But there are these Midrashim about, like, how important it is sort of to us theologically and philosophically that the Israelites remain different and remain this sort of cohesive other group within Egypt, because that's what makes the Exodus narrative make sense.
Right.
And that's what makes Jewish life, where we are very, very often sort of a minority culture within a larger majority that we're always navigating how we interact with. That kind of Midrash really speaks to the place in which we often find ourselves. But I think that that is potentially different, right, from the way that it's experienced at the outset. That's sort of the story that we tell after the fact to make sense of who we are, as opposed to whatever our ancestors' experience might have been.
Right. And so maybe I should loop back to the very reason why I included this text, and the title is Climate Refugees, is because it's explicitly stated that the Jews, and at this point they were a family, not yet a people, came to Egypt originally was because of the famine, because of the drought. So that's actually a climate thing, right? A drought is a climate thing, and it's a thing which is affecting millions of people today because of our greater climate change. And I think a lot of the things that you referenced, which are in the Midrash, are actually really pertinent to society today, right? There's this idea of permanence or impermanence. A lot of people are forced to leave their homes, and they don't really want to leave their homes, but they're not able to sustain themselves where they are. And there might be a hope to go back, but if our climate continues on the trajectory that it's going in, like, those lands won't be able to sustain agriculture.
Right. And not only that, but, like, potentially then they're going to need to move again, right? Like, now, 10, 20, 30 years from now is the place that they move to,
right,
able to sustain agriculture, like, or we on this, you know, continued movement.
Right. And then the other thing I think that comes up for me is, like, when a lot of people have to move, then there can often be a reaction by the people who were already there, which can be very negative. And we actually see that laid out very explicitly in the Torah itself, right?
Yeah.
There are Paro or his advisors or whatever, like, start this propaganda campaign about how these strangers that are different, if some other army attacks, they're going to join that other army, and so they're a danger to us, and then they're exploited, right? And so, unfortunately, this is something that we see today.
Yeah. No, it feels super, it's one of those examples where I sometimes feel like the text would feel like a little less relevant as opposed to, you know, speaking directly to what we're actually seeing, because it's like an awful situation. But I think I really love that you brought this text. I was really excited about it, even as it's kind of dark, because I think there's actually something really powerful about understanding ourselves as historically climate refugees. You know, there's like a lot of talk about, you know, Jews saying things like, we are refugees, or we were once refugees, or, you know, my people were refugees too, or whatever the slogan of the moment. But I think that usually when we say that, or at least the way that I had sort of always thought about that, was A, beginning with sort of the experience of being in Egypt and leaving Egypt, and then the experience sort of thereafter of much of Jewish history as, you know, a series of persecutions and expulsions and wanderings from place to place and never sort of being fully welcome. And, you know, we could point to like any number of particular historical examples where given Jewish communities became refugees. And I think there's actually something really striking here about like turning the clock a little bit further back and saying, like, no, actually, like, before any of that, we were climate refugees who, you know, needed to leave the place where we lived, the place that was home, the place that we thought we were supposed to be, because there just wasn't enough food and we couldn't survive there. And the Torah talks a lot about our responsibility to strangers because we were strangers in the land of Egypt. And, like, I wonder what it means to actually see ourselves having a particular responsibility towards climate refugees because we were climate refugees.
Right. Yeah. And when you talk about, like, winding back from where we originally were looking, I'm like, oh, let's wind back to Abraham, who was also a climate refugee. Or wind back to Noah, who was also a climate refugee. And then I wanted to, like, wind it back to Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve. And I'm like, well, I guess we can't call that a climate refugee per se. Like, it's definitely, they were forced out of their initial environment.
Yes.
And ecosystem into a harsher one.
Yeah. Right. They're almost like inverse climate refugees, right? They, like, leave a place where they don't have to think about how they're going to have food and are sort of forced into the beginning of people needing to consider how they're going to survive in the place that they are with the resources that they have.
Yeah, and that story is about the beginning of agriculture.
Yeah.
And since humanity depended on agriculture, then we have this system where the drought causes them to move because their agriculture can't survive.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I mean, I'm not, you know, by any means an expert in any kind of ancient foodways, but it would seem to me also that part of what changes is that there's an expectation of settledness, right? So pre-agriculture, you're also moving in response to climate events, right? Like, if there's not enough water or not enough food, you're going to pick up and move. But that's expected, right? Like, that's part of what it is to be a hunter-gatherer, is that you are on the move and, you know, following the natural produce of the planet and following herds of animals and things like that. And then with agriculture, there's an expectation of being in one place, right? Like, that's sort of when we become a little bit more settled.
Right. The investment idea comes back.
Yeah. And then it's a huge blow to pick up and move, even though in some ways the act of moving to a new place is not different. But now the experience and the meaning of it is a totally different thing and potentially a much more painful one.
Right. Wow. I never thought of the Torah as a very specific line of being moved with, like, against your will, but, like, in this line of developing agriculture at the same time. I'm not sure I'm articulating this well, but it is striking to see those stories lead to one another and really speak to our expectations and what we rely on. And
yeah.
One thing I would say is that there's the farm-based agriculture and then the herding-based agriculture, and the Cain and Abel story kind of reference that. And at this point, when we catch up with Jacob coming to Egypt, his family is very much like a herding-based family, and they're forced to move because their animals don't have things to eat. And then once the Jewish people come into the land of Israel, then there seems to be more of a focus on being settled and having those farmlands or trees or vineyards. And there were still animals, but this idea of the forefathers moving around, following the herds of sheep and moving from town to town has changed.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't really thought about that before. I wonder how much of that is, like, connected to, like, historical shifts during that time. I don't know, but I think you're right. I think there does seem to be an instinct that, like, over the course of the Torah, we shift from more of a, like, shepherd-based group to at least the anticipation, right? We're still like wandering in the wilderness until the end of the Torah, but there's an anticipation of like a landed agriculture of like growing crops and fields.
And both modes are heavily affected by the climate, as mm-hmm. we see in this text. It's just interesting, as you said, to look at what is the expectation of, am I going to stay in this spot or am I moving to go to where the resources are?
Yeah. I want to bring in like one more piece, which is kind of a theological one, where I think we sometimes look at the Exodus story and read it as like really unique and specific to the Jewish people. I mean, I should say like I in particular is certainly, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I do this all the time. Like I really experience that as like the story of my people and like a unique and particular story. But I think that that often comes with this sort of sense of it being like special and different and like God having a particular kind of intervention in it, which like we certainly see with, you know, like the splitting of the sea and, you know, the Exodus story and all of that. But I think there's actually kind of striking that even as the Midrash says that Jacob and his descendants were forced to go down into Egypt because of God's prophecy, right? That they would do that and they would be exiled and be slaves and come back. That actually the thing that ultimately brings them there is like really mundane and really not specific to the Jewish people, right? It's not the story of the destruction of the temple where it's like, because you did all the wrong things and God was angry at you and, you know, you were treating each other with baseless hatred, I exiled you to Egypt. It's like, no, like sometimes there's a drought and it's not, you know, necessarily punishment or anything like that. It's not special. It's just sometimes there's a drought. And when that happens, people move. And I think there's something potentially really sort of universalizing and humanizing about that. That while, yes, our like story is special and unique in particular, and like there are beautiful things about that and we should hold on to it, that actually there are elements of the story that I think are designed to help us connect to other people who might find themselves in very similar situations as we see millions of people experiencing the same phenomenon today. I'm Rabbi Paula Rose, the Associate Rabbi of Congregation Beth Shalom in Seattle. This podcast is a project of Congregation Beth Shalom and Ahavat Ve'avodat Adama, our community's environmental group.
Choni's Circle was recorded in Seattle, Washington at Full Track Productions. It was produced by Tamara Labicki and Dave Dintenfass.
With original music by Ella Labicki-Feldman.
Thanks for listening and learning with us.